No, I took it off. It's too heavy. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 46, text number 25 through 28. In the first verse, text 25, the word meanings, Tala Trayam, as long as three palm trees. Mahasaram, extremely solid. Dhanu, the bow. Yashtim, a stick. Iva, as. Ibharat, a royal elephant. Pabunja, he broke. Akena, with one. Hastena, hand. Sapta aham, for 7 days, Adudhat, held, Girim, a mountain. Talatrayam mahasaram. De dhanur yashtim iveparat. Babanjayakena hastena saptaham adadhat girim talatrayam mahasaram dhanuryashtim ivibharat Babanjayakena hastena saptaham adadhat girim talatrayam mahasaram dhanuryashtim ivibharat Babanjayakena hastena Sattaham adadhat girim. Talatrayam mahasaram. Dhanuryashtim ivibharat. Babanjayakena hastena. Saptaham adadhat girim talatrayam mahasaram dhanuryashtim ivibharat babanjayakena hastena Saptaha madadhat girim. Talatraya mahasaram. Danuryashtim vibhara. Vanjaykina hustina. Ladies, Talatrayam Mahasaram Translation, with the ease of a royal elephant breaking a stick, Krishna broke a powerful giant bow 3 talas long. He also held a mountain aloft for 7 days with just one hand. Purport, according to Acharya Vishwanath, a tala, palm tree, is a measurement of about 60 hastas, or 90 feet. Thus the great bow Krishna broke was 270 feet long. Not bad, huh? Now we can chant together. Pralambo denu korishtas prinavarto bakadaya daitya sura sura jito hataye nehalilaya. Here in Vrindavan, Krishna and Balaram easily destroyed demons like Pralamba, Denuka, Arishta, Trinavarta, and Baka, who had themselves defeated both demigods and other demons. Sri Shuka Vacha Iti Sangsmritya Nanda Krishna Nurakta Dihi Atyuto Bhavatushnim Prema Prasara Vivalaha. Shukadev Goswami said, thus intensely remembering Krishna again and again, Nanda Maharaj, his mind completely attached to the Lord, felt extreme anxiety and fell silent, overcome by the strength of his love. Yashoda Varnaya Manani Putrasya Charitani Cha Shrinvantya Shrunya Vasakshi Sneha Snuta Payodhara. As Mother Yashoda heard the descriptions of her son's activities, she poured out her tears, and milk flowed from her breasts out of love. Purport. From the very day that Krishna had left Mathura, Mother Yashoda, left for Mathura, Mother Yashoda, though counseled and consoled by hundreds of men and women, could see nothing but the face of her son. She kept her eyes closed to everyone else and cried constantly. Thus she could not recognize Uddhava, treat him with parental affection, ask him any questions, or give him any message for her son. She was simply overwhelmed with love for Krishna. Om Jnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Mena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. We've been hearing a lot from various places and various acharyas, getting glimpses into these very confidential pastimes of the Lord and his most exalted devotees. I was listening to Prabhupada's translation, dictations of the Krishna book, and as I was progressing, I came across this chapter, Uddhava Visits Vrindavan, from the Krishna book. And when I heard the first part of the chapter, I said, wow, Prabhupada's really talking about the real stuff here, kind of the things we've been talking about in our class, separation and vibhala. Actually, in this one of the verses here, the word here is vibhala, overcome, prema vibhala, prema prasada vibhala, overcome with the prema, of the force of the prema of love. So the intensity of the Brijbasi's love is overwhelming. And Srila Prabhupada gives a nice overview of these topics, some of these topics we've been discussing in the beginning of this chapter in the Krishna book. It's interesting because this chapter begins in the 10th canto in the Bhagavatam. By the way, I was reading recently in the Ancha Lila, Srila Prabhupada says in one purport, Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of the Vedic literature, and our Krishna book is the essence of the 10th canto. is the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So of course, what is the Krishna book? It's the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's not that Srila Prabhupada was being proud, but I thought it was very nice the way he stated it. The Krishna book is the essence of the essence. So the chapter begins by reference to Uddhava and Krishna speaking with Uddhava. So the verses are about that. Krishna's conversation, right away he starts talking with Uddhava. But Srila Prabhupada doesn't really quite get into it right away. He sort of gives a long preliminary at the beginning of this chapter, which I wanted to read. It's so nice. So this is the beginning of chapter 46 of Krishna book. Nanda Maharaj returned to Vrindavan without Krishna and Balaram. He was accompanied only by the cowherd boys and men. It was certainly a very pathetic scene for the gopis, Mother Yashoda, Srimati Radharani, and all the other residents of Vrindavan. Many devotees have tried to make adjustments to Krishna's being away from Vrindavan because, according to expert opinion, Krishna, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, never goes even a step out of Vrindavan. He always remains there. The explanation of expert devotees is that Krishna was actually not absent from Vrindavan. He came back with Nanda Maharaj as promised. When Krishna was starting from Mathura on the chariot driven by Akrura, and the gopis were blocking the way, Krishna assured them that he was coming back just after finishing his business in Mathura. He told them not to be overwhelmed, and in this way pacified them. But when he failed to come back with Nanda Maharaj, it appeared that either he cheated them or could not keep his promise. Expert devotees, however, have decided that Krishna was neither a cheater nor a breaker of promises. Krishna, in his original identity, returned with Nanda Maharaj and stayed with the gopis and Mother Yashoda in his bhava expansion. Krishna and Balaram remained in Mathura, not in their original forms, but in their expansions as Vasudeva and Sankarshan. The real Krishna and Balaram are in Vrindavan in their bhava manifestation, whereas in Mathura they appeared in the Prabhav and Vaibhav expansions. This is the expert opinion of advanced devotees of Krishna. Externally, however, they were absent from Vrindavan. Therefore, when Nanda Maharaj was preparing to return to Vrindavan, there was some discussion between him and the boys concerning how they could live in separation. The conclusion to separate was reached by mutual agreement. Vasudeva and Devaki, who happened to be the real parents of Krishna and Balaram, wanted to keep them now because of the death of Kamsa. While Kamsa was alive, Krishna and Balaram were kept under the protection of Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan. Now, naturally, the father and mother of Krishna and Balaram wanted them to remain, specifically for the reformatory function of purification, the sacred thread ceremony. They also wanted to give them a proper education, for this is the duty of the father. Another consideration was that all the friends of Kamsa outside Mathura were planning to attack Mathura. For that reason, also, Krishna's presence was required. Krishna did not want Vrindavan disturbed by enemies like Dantavakra and Jarasandha. If Krishna were to go to Vrindavan, these enemies would not only attack Mathura, but would go on to Vrindavan, and the peaceful inhabitants of Vrindavan would be disturbed. Krishna therefore decided to remain in Mathura, and Nanda Maharaj went back to Vrindavan. Although the inhabitants of Vrindavan felt separation from Krishna, the resulting ecstasy, bhava, caused them to perceive that Krishna was always present with them by his lila, or pastimes. Since Krishna had departed from Vrindavan and gone to Mathura, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, especially Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, Srimati Radharani, the gopis and the cowherd boys, were simply thinking of Krishna at every step. They were thinking, here Krishna was playing in this way. Here Krishna was blowing his flute. Krishna was joking with us in this way, and Krishna was embracing us like this. This is called Lila Smarana, and it is the process of association with Krishna most recommended by great devotees. Even Lord Chaitanya, when he was at Puri, enjoyed Lila Smarana association with Krishna. Those in the most exalted position of devotional service and ecstasy can live with Krishna always, by remembering his pastimes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has given us a transcendental literary work entitled Krishna Bhavanamrita, which is full with Krishna's pastimes. Exalted devotees can remain absorbed in Krishna thought by reading such books. Any book of Krishna Lila, even this book, Krishna, or our teachings of Lord Chaitanya, is actually solace for devotees feeling separation from Krishna. That Krishna and Balaram did not return to Vrindavan can be adjusted as follows. They did not break their promise to return to Vrindavan, nor were they absent, but their presence was necessary in Mathura. So Krishna can do both things at the same time. He could attend to his responsibilities in Mathura and similarly simultaneously be present in Vrindavan. Here Prabhupada mentions this Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's transcendental literary work entitled Krishna Bhavanamrita. Krishna Bhavanamrita is one of three especially famous books of Lila Smarana that deal with, that are set up as according to the times of the day, what Krishna does. So beginning from early morning until, well, all through 24 hours. Generally, the day is broken into eight periods, Ashtakalya Lila. But this Krishna Bhavanamrita, it has more chapters than that, 11 or 12 chapters. In any case, it's also set up in the same way. It's a very elevated work, Krishna Bhavanamrita, Vishwanath Chakravarti. It's also called Krishna Bhavanamrita Mahakavya. So Mahakavya means great work or great poetry. I haven't actually read the book. I read part of it many years ago. It's available on the internet, as everything is, if you want to get an idea about it. Probably Krishna Kratta's translation. A lot of his translations are floating around here and there on the internet. Kusha Kratta. But one thing I remember about the book, and this is why it's called Mahakavya, is because of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's expertise in capturing the exchanges between Krishna and the gopis and all the wordplay that they use. Really, to appreciate these works, you kind of have to be a Sanskrit scholar to really get into the amrita, the real nectar. Bhavanamrita means the nectar of remembering Krishna. But there's a lot of nectar in all the wordplay, the double meanings and so on. So the acharyas may explain these things in their commentaries. But if you actually know the original Sanskrit, I'm sure it's extremely relishable. See how Krishna and the gopis joke with each other. So that book is especially about the Madhurya Rasa. Now we're entering into, at least we've been hearing a little bit about Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda, their relationship with Krishna, the Vatsalya Rasa, and the progression in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Ramananda Sambad, where Lord Chaitanya is speaking with Ramananda. Ramananda Rai is going farther and farther, deeper and deeper. It's quite interesting to see the progression, because when we read Bhagavad Gita, we say the ultimate verse is Sarva Dharman Parichaja, but that's just getting started when you read Ramananda Sambad. That's just when things are getting warmed up. So after that, we start hearing about the different rasas and how one progresses after the other. They build, each one adds another level of intimacy. So we have in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ramananda Rai speaks about dasya, bhava, first servitude, and then he speaks about the cowherd boys, and that's the progression. They're higher. The cowherd boys, of course, servitude is all about respect. And then the cowherd boys, there's a level of intimacy there. But then when you get to Vatsalya, then that intimacy increases to such an extent that one feels oneself superior, even telling Krishna what to do. Although there's part of that is also, we have sort of a transition with some of the cowherd boys where they also have that, telling Krishna what to do. In Balaram also he has that, especially that mix of, because he's older than Krishna. So in text 76 of Madhyalila, chapter 8, the Lord says to Ramananda Rai, "This statement is very good, but please proceed even further." So the statement was something about the cowherd boys. So then Ramananda Rai then replied, "Loving service to the Lord in the parental relationship is the highest perfectional stage." Of course, Ramananda keeps saying this is the highest. And Lord Chaitanya says, keep going. So Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse The stage of loving service to the Lord in parental affection is an advanced stage of love in fraternity. In a fraternal relationship, there is a sense of equality, but when the sense of equality is advanced in affection, one attains the platform of parental love. In this connection, the following verse is cited from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10.8.46, wherein Maharaj Parikshit voices his appreciation of Nanda Maharaj's and Mother Yashoda's intense love for Krishna. So naturally, earlier in the Bhagavatam, we're hearing about Krishna's childhood pastimes, early childhood, so we get more of a look into the Vatsalya Rasa during those chapters. So this is the verse that is referred to, or Ramananda Rai is quoting now to substantiate his point about parental rasa. This is 10.8.46. Nandakim akarod brahman shreya eva mahodayam yashoda va mahabhaga papau yasya stanam hari. Ramananda Rai continued, quoting Parikshit Maharaj, speaking to Shukadeva, O Brahmana, what pious activities did Nanda Maharaj perform by which he received the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his son? And what pious activities did Mother Yashoda perform that made the Absolute Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna call her mother and suck her breasts? So that's Prabhupada's translation in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And this is his translation in the chapter 8. Of course, Prabhupada translated up through the 13th chapter of the 10th canto. So this is Prabhupada's translation in the 10th canto itself. Having heard of the great fortune of Mother Yashoda, Parikshit Maharaj inquired from Shukadeva Goswami, O learned Brahmana, Mother Yashoda's breast milk was sucked by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What past auspicious activities did she and Nanda Maharaj perform to achieve such perfection and ecstatic love? And I'll read Srila Prabhupada's purport from the 10th canto. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7.16, Chatur vidha bhajante mam janak sukritinor juna. Without sukriti or pious activities, no one can come to the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is approached by four kinds of pious men, arto jigyasu rartarti jnani cha. But here we see that Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda surpassed all of them. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj naturally inquired, what kinds of pious activities did they perform in their past lives, by which they achieved such a stage of perfection? Of course, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda are accepted as the father and mother of Krishna. If Mother Yashoda was more fortunate than Nanda Maharaj, Krishna's father, because Nanda Maharaj was sometimes separated from Krishna, whereas Yashoda, Krishna's mother, was not separated from Krishna at any moment. Now this is, I can't really understand what Prabhupada is saying here, but we'll allow Prabhupada's ecstasy. Now, I can understand in childhood when he was always playing in the courtyard and then Nanda was out herding cows, but you see the Prabhupada extends it. So Prabhupada says, from Krishna's babyhood to his childhood, and from his childhood to his youth, Mother Yashoda was always in association with Krishna. Even when Krishna was grown up, he would go to Vrindavan and sit on the lap of Mother Yashoda. Therefore, there is no comparison to the fortune of Mother Yashoda. And Parikshit Maharaj naturally inquired, Yashoda cha mahabhaga. What was Mother Yashoda's great fortune? One thing I thought was interesting here, one is that not only about Mother Yashoda never being separated from Krishna, even at all his different ages, but Prabhupada says he would go to Vrindavan and sit on the lap of Mother Yashoda. So this is something the Acharyas point to, that Krishna returns to Vrindavan, even though we tend to hear that he never returned, and they're always lamenting in separation, but here Prabhupada is saying, there's a famous verse that the Acharyas quote, the residents of Dwarka, when Krishna is entering Dwarka in the 11th chapter, first canto. I think it's the 11th chapter, yes. There's one verse, I forget the verse number, where the residents of Dwarka are saying, we have to suffer your separation because you're always going out And they mention different places, and one of the places they mention is Vrindavan. Although the word isn't Vrindavan, it's some other word like Madhupuri, or I forget what the word is, but the Acharyas have interpreted it to mean that here we get the glimpse, or we're getting the hint, that Krishna does leave Dwarka and sometimes leaves Dwarka and goes to Vrindavan to visit the Brajvasis. So here Prabhupada is also hinting at that here when he says that Krishna would go to Vrindavan when he was grown up and sit on the lap of Mother Yashoda. Of course, this scene is played out also at Kurukshetra. Krishna and Balaram were like 50 years old at that time, in their 50s, and they came and sat on the lap of Mother Yashoda and cried incessant tears. All of them were crying. So that's Prabhupada's purport to the verse quoted by Ramananda Rai. And then also Ramananda Rai continues. This is text 78, chapter 8 of the Majjhalila. Ne mam virincho na bhavo na shri rapyanga sangshaya prasadam lebhire gopi yat tat prapa vimuktidat. The favor Mother Yashoda obtained from Sri Krishna, the bestower of liberation, was never obtained even by Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva, nor even by the goddess of fortune, who always remains on the chest of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. So, purport from Majjhalila. This is a statement from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.9.20. Krishna agreed to be bound by Mother Yashoda after she had given up trying to bind Krishna with ropes. This is another appreciation made by Shukadeva Goswami in his narration of the pastimes of Krishna before Maharaj Pariksit. So before Pariksit Maharaj was appreciating Yashoda's good fortune, and now Shukadeva Goswami is. So this also Prabhupada, of course, has written about in the 10th canto. This is his translation in the 10th canto. Neither Lord Brahma, nor Lord Shiva, nor even the goddess of fortune, who is always the better half of the Supreme Lord, can obtain from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the deliverer from this material world, such mercy as received by Mother Yashoda. So I'd like to read that purport also. It's quite nice. So this is Prabhupada's purport to that in the 10th canto. This is a comparative study between Mother Yashoda and other devotees of the Lord. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi 5, 142, Ekala Ishvara Krishna, or Ekale Ishvara Krishna, Ara Sabha Britya. The only Supreme Master is Krishna, and all others are His servants. Krishna has the transcendental quality of Britya Vasyata, becoming subordinate to His Britya, or servant. Now, although everyone is Britya, and although Krishna has the quality of becoming subordinate to his Britya, the position of Mother Yashoda is the greatest. Lord Brahma is Britya, the servant of Krishna. So Prabhupada is mentioning Brahma because Brahma is mentioned in the verse. Brahma and Shiva and the goddess of fortune. Lord Brahma is Britya, a servant of Krishna, and he is Adi Kavi, the original creator of this universe. Tene brahmaridaya adi kavaye. Nonetheless, even though he could not obtain the mercy, such mercy as Mother Yashoda, nonetheless, even he could not obtain such mercy as Mother Yashoda. As for Shiva, he is the topmost Vaishnava, Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. What to speak of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is the Lord's constant companion in service, since she always associates with his body. But even she could not get such mercy. Therefore, Maharaj Pariksit was surprised, thinking, what did Mother Yashoda and Nandamaraj do in their previous lives, by which they got such a great opportunity, the opportunity to be the affectionate father and mother of Krishna? In this verse, there are three negative pronouncements. Na, na, na. When anything is uttered three times, do it, do it, do it. One should understand that this is meant to indicate great stress on a fact. In this verse we find na le pire, na le pire, na le pire. Yet Mother Yashoda is in the topmost exalted position. So na le pire means did not obtain. Yet Mother Yashoda is in the topmost exalted position, and thus Krishna has become completely subordinate to her. I think the idea of the yet here, I kind of stumbled on it when I read this. In this verse, we find nalibire, 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 yet Mother Yashoda, because it says, they did not, they did not, they did not, in other words, yet Mother Yashoda did. And three times for emphasis to show how hard it is to attain this position. But Mother Yashoda, she attained the position of this kind of affection for Krishna. The word vimuktidad is also significant. There are different types of liberation, such as sayujya, salokya, sarupya, sarshti, and samipya. But vimukti means special mukti. When after liberation one is situated on the platform of prema bhakti, one is said to have achieved vimukti, special mukti. Therefore the word na is mentioned. That exalted platform of prema is described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as prema pumarto mahan. And Mother Yashoda naturally acts in such an exalted position in loving affairs. She is therefore a nitya siddha devotee, an expansion of Krishna's ladini potency, his potency to enjoy transcendental bliss through expansions who are special devotees. Ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhavita bihi. Such devotees are not sadhana siddha. So that's the end of that purport from the 10th canto, quoted by Ramananda Rai. There's another famous verse, which I won't read, but it's often quoted by the devotees to glorify Mother Yashoda, quoted by the acharyas. I won't read the purport, but this is the translation from the 10th canto. The glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are studied through the three Vedas, the Upanishads, the literature of Sankhya Yoga, and other Vaishnav literature. Yet Mother Yashoda considered the Supreme Person her ordinary child. That's 10.8.45. Now there's a verse that sort of reflects on this. It's Shrutim apare smritim itare bharatamanye bhajantu bhavabita ahamiha vande nanda yashalinde param brahma. I think this is in the Pajavali, Rupa Goswami's collection of verses. So the devotee prays that people, there are those who worship the Mahabharata and the Upanishads and other Shrutis, fearing material existence. That's their motive. They want liberation. That's why they study these scriptures. They worship these scriptures, the Upanishads, the Mahabharata, and other Shruti and Smriti. But he says, as for me, I worship Nanda Maharaj, in whose courtyard the Supreme Personality of Godhead is crawling like a child. So that's, they are the exalted. I don't worship the Shruti and Smriti. I worship Nanda Maharaj, because imagine his fortune. God himself, whom all these great literatures and great personalities are seeking, is crawling in his courtyard and getting dirty. So I'll end with, I was going to read something about parental affection in NOD, but nectar devotion, but it's getting late. So I just want to read this prayer to Mother Yashoda. Actually, a couple of things about her. This is from the Radha Krishna Ganodesh Deepika, which describes the associates of Radha and Krishna, associates of Krishna. So just two verses from there. Krishna's mother is named Yashoda because she bestows the fame, Yashaha, on the cowherd residents of Braja. She is like the personification of parental love for Krishna. Her complexion is dark, and her garments are like a rainbow. Mother Yashoda's body is of medium size, neither large nor small. She has long black hair. Her closest friends are Aindavi and Kirtida. So finally, this prayer, I don't know, it may be composed. It's from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Srila Prabhupada quotes it in the Nectar of Devotion. It may have been composed by Rupa Goswami. Let me be given protection by Mother Yashoda, whose curly hairs are bound with thread, whose hair is very brightly beautified by the vermilion placed in the part, and whose bodily frame derides all her ornaments. Her eyes are always engaged in seeing the face of Krishna, and thus they are always filled with tears. Her complexion, which resembles the bluish lotus flower, is enhanced in beauty by her dressing herself with many colorful garments. Let her merciful glance fall on all of us so that we may be protected from the clutches of Maya and smoothly progress in our devotional service. We often hear how different gopis dress in different ways. For example, Radharani wears a blue sari, just as Krishna wears gold. She wears a blue sari. So Mother Yashoda dresses like a rainbow. She likes to wear different mix of colors. And she has a dark complexion like Krishna. So that's a little something about the glories of Mother Yashoda, who's crying here in this pastime we're reading today. She won't open her eyes. She only, because she, internally she's seeing Krishna. She doesn't want to see anybody or anything else. She only wants to see Krishna. And she's not even taking part in the conversation between Nanda and Yashoda. She can't speak or do anything but cry, moisten the ground of Vrindavan with her breast milk and her tears. So, any questions or comments? Madan Mohan Prabhu?
Just a thought about how Krishna never leaves Vrindavan and how he comes back and he doesn't come back. In a simple way, a lot of times somebody moves away. They may come to visit, but they never came back in the sense that they never lived there again. So it's a different relationship if they just visit. Even if they visit, you know, so maybe you go someplace for a day or two and then they go away again. But you may say, well, they never really came back. To think that every day they would be they'd be there, they'd live there. So that's an easy way for makes sense to me.
Like they have that expression, you can't go home again. Yeah. So the idea is you can't recreate what you had when you were a child, that, you know, your home life during that period of your life. But Krishna can. He can do it. He does it eternally.
You read something where he stays eternally or forever in his Bhava Leela or something like that?
Yes, Bhava Rupa.
But is that a manifested form or subtler? I mean,
because usually it's described as, yes, uppercut, unmanifest. So, yeah, there was separation because it appeared, it didn't seem that Krishna was there. It's like here. And we're seeing one aspect of it. You showed us thinking that Krishna didn't come back. When Nanda Maharaj came back, there was no Krishna there. But Krishna did come back, but in some unmanifested form, uppercut. That's the Bhava Rupa. This is considered to be Krishna's most endearing, lovable form, most intensely lovable form, because he's always there in the hearts of his devotees. How can he escape? You know that nice pastime of Bilwa Mangala Thakur? He's playing with Krishna, Krishna's teasing him, and Krishna escapes from his grasp, and he says, you may be able to escape from my hands, but never from my heart. Krishna can never escape from the Brijbasis' hearts. That's why he can't leave, because they have him. They control him. So if they want him to stay, he has to stay. And this is nice, because the acharyas reconcile. Krishna promised to come back, so how could he not come back? How could he cheat? He's not a cheater or a breaker of promises, Prabhupada said. And the acharyas have reconciled this. Anything else? Jai Yashoda Mai ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.